People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, Flint, Michigan was the birthplace of General Motors, and it was the labor of the working people in Flint that helped turn GM into one of the world's most dominating corporations. But the people in Flint also fought for labor rights, and the city was the site of one of the most important strikes in labor history. But as the auto industry moved out seeking cheaper labor and higher profits, Flint is a community that's been left in ruins. On this edition of People's Tribune Radio, we look at what's happened in Flint, Michigan, through the eyes of Claire McClinton, an organizer for Local 659 of the United Auto Workers.
We are just under siege by the global economy and the quest for a competition and what have you. And just like one worker lamented during the 98 strike, well, we know there's competition and we know about the globalization and all of that, but what about us? And that is the question of the day. And that is where the lines of the battle are being drawn.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper, People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. In today's increasingly savage, capitalist, globalized economy, there are winners and there are losers. There are the exploiters and the exploited. And in some cases, especially in the United States, the people who find themselves being left to twist in the wind are the very people who helped to build some of the most powerful corporations in the world. In some cases, generations toiled for these mega corporations, and when they were no longer needed, they were simply cast aside. In the case of Flint, Michigan, a whole community has been left to wither. On this edition of People's Tribune Radio, we look at the situation in Flint, Michigan, with our guest, Claire McClinton. McClinton is an auto worker at the Flint Metal Center. Born and raised in Flint, she's the daughter of Flint auto workers. She's been active in the union and in the community for over 20 years. She's also a founding member of the Labor Party.
The best way to characterize the situation in Flint is just to talk about some of the things that I've personally observed and experienced just in the last year here in Flint. And just to give you for instance, during the Christmas holidays, I woke up one morning and it was a Monday morning, and I looked outside to see if our garbage truck had passed. And when I looked through the window, right across the street from me, about 9 or 10 feet high, was piled up with couches, dressers, clothes, children's toys, and everything. They had come in that morning and evicted my neighbors that live right across the street from me. And I was just stunned, you know. Another example is I was on my way to work one day, and I stopped by the little neighborhood grocery store to pick up a newspaper. And I was standing at the newsstand, and I looked up and saw a young man. He was facing the counter, and one of the grocery store owners was standing over him, and he was reaching in this young man's coat and in this young man's pants. I couldn't understand what was going on. And he pulled out two packs of meat that the young man was trying to steal out the store. I was there, and there was an older gentleman there, and we were both holding our breath thinking that there might be an incident. But thankfully, the store owner just told the kid to get out and don't come back. You know, but just trying to live a normal life here in Flint, and you're just hammered with these types of incidents through normal living. And the last thing I want to share with you is that in the last year, I have went to funerals and stood beside mothers who are burying their children here in Flint. Two of them from violent crimes. One had a heart attack. You know, and this is something that is just an expression of the deterioration of the quality of life here in Flint, and it's very, very painful and very stressful for those of us in Flint.
Mothers and children are often the people who are most affected by what's happening to Flint.
Too many mothers are burying their children due to gun violence and crime, through the hopelessness of our young people who find themselves in these dangerous situations in Flint. And women and children are bearing the brunt of this devastation because, to share with you another incident, I got a phone call right before Labor Day. A community activist called and said they had a woman and three children that didn't have anywhere to stay. So I did my usual, which is to go through and call the different shelters around the Flint area and see could we get them put in there. Well, to my amazement, all of the shelters were full. They had no room to take any more women and children. And the one shelter told me that they could come in that Tuesday because it was Labor Day and it was a Sunday, and we can take them Tuesday maybe. When we did go down to the shelter, we were able to find somewhere for her to stay. And when we did make it down to the shelter, there was another woman who had slept outside the shelter door all night so that she could be the first one in the shelter. And then there was no room again. So when we say that Flint is devastated, this is not just a phrase. This is it's a real fight to survive going on in our city. We were able to, through the goodness of someone's heart, a real estate person allowed her to get in before she got her assistance going. And that was something that's very rare and hard to do. But for almost 2 weeks, we had to make sure that her children were in school. We had people taking their children to school and things like that, because another underlying problem that poor women with their children are confronted with is that when you get in dire straits, you're subject for your children to be taken away from you. So that's another backlash or byproduct of the condition of women and children in the city of Flint. The food banks and the food kitchens and things are just overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed with people. Many of them run out of food and they have to shut their doors temporarily and come back. So it's not a pretty sight. It's not something that appears to be letting up anytime soon.
You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. Today our guest is labor organizer for the United Auto Workers, Claire McClinton. We're talking about Flint, Michigan, and how that community has been devastated as the auto industry has moved out in search of cheaper labor and higher profits. When listening to pronouncements by a conservative federal administration, there's a lot of emphasis being put on volunteerism and charity, stepping up to try and meet the needs of people who are impoverished and in dire straits, such as many of the people are in Flint, Michigan. Can volunteerism and community service and charity actually meet the needs?
I think you raise an interesting point, and I think one of the ways that I can address that point is to talk about the fact that here in Flint in 1937, let's go back a little bit about Flint and talk about how in 1937 a group of people who had nothing but their spirit and their stick-to-itiveness and their love for humanity faced off General Motors and was able to win recognition, and the UAW was born. This event, and as years went by, this event actually was a great contribution to the standard of living and the quality of life of people, not just here in Flint, but was an inspiration for union organizing around the country. The people here have come together to address their problems in a big, big way. Flint was the first major city to seat an African-American mayor. At that time, we didn't have an elected mayor, but we had a mayor who was seated through the city council, and Flint was the first there, too. We were also, in the 60s, the first city to enact an open housing ordinance in Flint. So Flint is a city that where the people have no problem with facing the obstacles that come their way and finding a way against the odds to break through and make some changes for the good of our community.
People in Flint, Michigan have a long history of organizing to fight for their rights and for their needs. Claire McClinton says that one of those victories was what was called the Open Housing Ordinance.
The Open Housing Ordinance was a legislation that was passed locally, and it didn't come easy. There were sit-ins on City Hall and what have you to ensure fair housing for the black people in the city of Flint who were being denied an opportunity to live where they so chose.
On many occasions, it's been labor strikes that have made the difference in the battle for human rights and dignity in Flint.
There was another strike, a big strike in 46, and then there was another strike, I believe, in 70. The strike in 70 was to ensure a cost of living allowance. And then we had the strike in 98, which was a strike that was to ensure that General Motors kept a promise for jobs in Flint. It had a totally different character than previous strikes. And previous struggles were for the betterment of wages and working conditions. And the 98 strike characterized, we want our jobs. The strike was successful in the aspect that the strike reawakened the sentiments of social justice and economic justice around the Flint area. It brought to life something that appeared to be barely have a pulse, and that was the determination and the fight that the workers waged along with the support of the community. Even to this day, some of the old-timers are overwhelmed and talk about the 98 strike is the first time that they had seen a strike with the amount of community support that one had.
Despite the valiant fight and short-term victories, jobs continue to be taken away from the people in Flint.
We are losing jobs. Buick City several weeks ago closed its doors. General Motors just announced almost 3,000 new jobs lost. Those are at Lake Orion in Michigan and also in Linden, New Jersey. That will have a ripple effect on Flint. And we are just under siege by the global economy and the quest for a competition and what have you. And just like one worker lamented during the 98 strike, well, we know there's competition and we know about the globalization and all of that, but what about us? And that is the question of the day. And that is where the lines of the battle are being drawn.
When it comes to combating some of the worst excesses of corporate-led globalization, a lot of emphasis and action has been put into developing international labor solidarity. There is no International United Auto Workers, and Claire McClinton is concerned that the national UAW may have lost its way as well.
Those of us that have loved and supported the UAW all of these years wonder why the voices of the UAW are silent when these announcements, when Ford announced 30,000 jobs would be lost, and the silence was deafening. Coming from our UAW headquarters, we haven't heard an official statement from the UAW about the GM jobs that are being lost. The UAW has some big problems. And as I say, the spirit of the UAW and what it represents is loved by all of us in the Flint area. But the UAW is trying to function as an industrial union and we have a new technology workplace, and there is no fit there. It doesn't fit. And we're anxious for the UAW to reorganize itself and restructure itself to confront the new realities that auto workers and community people face here in Flint and around this country. What we're experiencing right now is, for lack of a better way to describe it, is a high-paid sweatshop. We've got good wages and good benefits, but the company has reorganized the workplace so drastically until it's just a shadow of its former self. It makes the work environment very unpleasant, very stressful, and the other thing that it does is to drive a wedge among the workers themselves. For some reason, and I don't have all the answers, but the UAW has not been able to reorganize its structure to complement the needs of the workers in this new environment. The other thing I want to say is that the days of just getting a good contract are no longer going to solve our problem. We as UAW members are concerned about our children and grandchildren. These are the people that are becoming part of a new class of workers, and the UAW has not adequately went beyond the bounds of the workplace in order to address the social and economic situation of the larger community. When the corporation says that there's jobs lost, that means that our children and grandchildren don't have a job to look forward to, a decent paying job with wages and benefits that we are used to and that we enjoy. The fact that the welfare reform, which was passed in 1996, is coming into maturity because the 5-year limit is here, this is just putting an added pressure and an added burden and pushing the economic condition of the people even more depressed. The UAW has a big problem and a big challenge. The UAW is flummoxed or confused or something. And a couple examples of that was last year I had an opportunity to go with some other UAW members to lobby Congress about the most favored nation trade pact, because trade is a big issue in the union movement. But it was interesting to me that at the same time that we were in Washington, there were people from all over the country there fighting globalization. I believe the World Trade Organization was having a meeting at the time. And there were youth and welfare groups and people from all over the country. And it seemed to me that the UAW didn't see that there was a relationship between the struggle that they were waging and the one that we were waging. Because, in fact, the struggle, the issue of the most favored nation is really an issue of the most favored class. And this is the perspective that we in the union movement are going to have to take up if we hope to ever win the fight that we're waging. Another example is recently there's some legislation being proposed in the Senate to expand the corporate average fuel economy. This is commonly known as CAF. And environmentalists and social activists have fought for years to try and lobby and get legislation for clean air and things like that. Now our UAW is trying to persuade its members to call their legislature and stop the expansion of these controls. And someone has to sit back and ask themselves, why do you have to sacrifice clean air to have a job. There's something wrong with the system when you have to make those kind of choices. And this is why I say it's heartbreaking to us in the UAW and in the Flint area to see the UAW go out like that. And we're going to educate ourselves and our community and see can we address our economic security problems another way.
With the situation as it is in Flint and where it appears to be going, what does this mean for the future of the children and the grandchildren of this community?
Those of us that are activists are working very hard to pull together from our communities, from the trade unions, from the clergy, from the welfare mothers who want to empower themselves and fight against their situation. We're in the process of trying to pull all the out of those elements, the humanitarians, the revolutionaries, the progressives, and the forward-thinking people, and see can we come together and find our voice of consciousness, find that voice that was there in 1937, the voice that was there on the City Hall lawn in the 60s for fair housing, the voice that was there to break down the barriers of discrimination, and the voices that was out there in the summer of 98 saying that we feel that we have a right to a decent life, a quality of life. So we're out there looking, and we're out there connecting with those voices.
A view from and of Flint, Michigan, with our guest, United Auto Workers organizer and founding member of the Labor Party, Claire McClinton. Claire McClinton spoke with People's Tribune Radio Great Lakes correspondent David Apsey in Flint, Michigan. You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. The following is an editorial from the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The true significance of the Enron bankruptcy is being buried beneath layers of reporting on the lurid details of the scandal. There is individual corruption here, no doubt, but in fact the Enron bankruptcy is simply part and parcel of a corrupt and dying system. It's getting a lot of attention because of its size and the number of lives that were ruined, but the collapse of Enron was just the latest bankruptcy in a rising tide of bankruptcies, both household and corporate. Today, more and more workers are being plunged into poverty, and there is a continuing general decline in corporate profits, with no end in sight. Over the past 20 or 30 years, the capitalists have been on a rampage, replacing workers with machinery, moving factories to wherever the labor is cheapest, cutting the social safety net, impoverishing whole regions, making war on anyone who gets in their way, all in an effort to guarantee the maximum possible profit. But the poverty and unemployment that has resulted is destroying the market. People with no money can't buy anything. As the market shrinks, the capitalist system itself is plunged into crisis. The massive amounts of capital being shifted into speculation by companies such as Enron are a symptom of a system in crisis. Corruption and thievery in high places also marks a system in crisis. The ideology among Enron's leadership, get obscenely rich no matter how many people are hurt, simply reflects the general ideology of American capitalism. How can such a selfish ideology lead to anything good? The American people are a generous and compassionate people. We need to struggle to bring ideas of unity and concern for the common good to the surface, for this is the true ideology of the people. Yes, there should be an investigation, and yes, someone should go to jail over this. A crime against humanity was committed, but we would make a mistake to think this is an isolated case. The capitalist system is breaking down. We don't just need new laws. We need a new system, one that will guarantee that no one is homeless or hungry or goes without health care or any necessity, no matter what. My name is Mike Thornton, the host of People's Tribune Radio. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we'd like to take this opportunity to thank the approximately 60 radio stations around the world that currently air PTR. From New Zealand to New York, to California to Costa Rica, these fine radio stations have chosen to allow People's Tribune Radio to be part of their broadcast schedule, and we appreciate them for it. And very special thanks to the many listeners who have contacted us over the last few years to express their appreciation of People's Tribune Radio. You're the reason that we do this show. And that's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the very tools of computerization and robotics that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide are used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League or our other print or audio publications, you can contact us by calling 1-800-691-6888, 1-800-691-6888, or visit us on the web at www.lrna.org. My name is Mike Thornton, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.